Beginning of our study this morning, that there is a time frame that we're able to identify with this part of our study, at least in a general way. And so when we think about the providential work of God, most of us would say, well, I've given him a month or two, and I haven't seen things change too much here. So I want you to be aware, if you look back in Genesis chapter 37, notice the two markers that we have time-wise here. First, Genesis 37 and verse 2. How old is Joseph when this story starts? Now, I'm not sure how quickly after verse 2 it is when he gets sold into Egypt, but it seems to me like the record means to indicate that this is happens in pretty close proximity to this time. What? How old is Joseph when this starts?
17.
All right, 17. Look over now at Genesis 41, and notice the other marker at verse 46. Now, This is in conjunction with Joseph's coming to favor in Pharaoh's household and his being entrusted with the responsibility Pharaoh grants him to prepare for Egypt's future. How old is Joseph at this time?
30
years old. So we have a 13-year period here of time in which all of this is going on, in which you have to ask yourself, now, if I had been there, would it have seemed to me like God was, as you hear some people say it, God was at work in this individual's life? So you kind of think about it in that way. Now, after this point, remember there are the 7 years of plenty, and then the 7 years of famine take place, and then there's enough, if you get far enough into that, where they hear up where Jacob and his sons are, his other sons are, that there's bread in Egypt, and he sins once, and then he sins again. And so obviously more time has to pass here, and maybe it's as much as 13 years more. And so when we get down that far into the story, we could be in Joseph's mid-40s at least, or about that period of time, at least when he is in his early 40s. So you get an idea of how big a chunk of life we're talking about here. Now, last time we saw what all the mix of circumstances that led to his being sold into Egypt. Now let's begin to look in chapter 39 at what happens once he's there. And I've chosen the title for this part of our study really from Genesis 39 and verse 21. God was with Joseph, and what does it say that he does here? All right, he showed him mercy. And mercy, if you don't know, in the older versions, loving kindness in the American Standard Version's errors, and then steadfast love in the English Standard Version and Kindred Version today. It's the Hebrew word chesed. It's a very important concept in the Old Testament, that God is the kind of a God who will make a covenant and then will be loyal to it in a way that blesses his people. So this is the idea in these circumstances. We want to think about, all right, what happens to Joseph? What does God do about it? And how does Joseph cooperate with God? What does Joseph do that makes it possible for God to do this with him or with these circumstances that go on? Now, we won't have time to read every bit of this. Fortunately, you guys are familiar with the story from your childhood up, a lot of you. So think about it with this. Joseph is brought to down to Egypt. It happens that the person who purchases him from the Ishmaelite traders who have come down here is whom?
Potiphar.
Potiphar. And what station in life does Potiphar happen to have? All right, he's an officer of Pharaoh, and specifically what officer?
Captain.
Captain of the guard. So you have a man here who's going to have apparently some wealth, also some connections that are going to be important as this story goes along, and it's going to be a situation where Joseph is going to begin to have contact with the household of Pharaoh, for good or bad. We're going to see that happen here. Now, in this situation, Joseph is brought into a foreign country. He's sold to be a servant. How might someone have felt about that? How might you have felt about that? What could have been the way you responded to that situation?
Abandoned by
God. All right, could have felt abandoned. You could have begun to try to fit in. You could have resented it and become angry. You know, there's any number of ways like that. What we're told now is that the Lord is with Joseph, and the Lord's being with Joseph in this case is interesting because geographically God is not attached to one location, and circumstantially God is not limited by whether things are going good or bad in your life at the time. And what does the Lord's being with Joseph, what kind of effect does it have here in verses 2 and 3 following there?
Became very successful.
All right. Joseph becomes a successful man in the house of his Egyptian master. The master sees in verse 3 that the Lord is with Joseph. The Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. We wonder to what degree this master knows who the Lord is, or if he has just heard Joseph talk about his God being Jehovah, the Lord, or not. But you ask yourself, what is Joseph doing now that makes this possible? What's Joseph's role in God blessing him and making him successful and allowing everything to prosper in his hands?
Well, he's accepting where he is in life. He's not fighting against.
All right.
Trying to escape.
All right. So on the one hand, that part of it we see. What must Joseph have been doing, though?
The same thing he did before he was put into captivity. Saying prayers and, you know,
looking
like he should.
All right.
Let his belief be seen.
All right, and he did it. It must mean that he is showing some capability in his everyday work and his functioning in his house, and that he's doing it as service to God and not just as service to Potiphar. They can see a capability in this young man. He's industrious. He's doing his best, and he's diligent. It has to mean at least that part of it. God's providence doesn't mean that he grants an individual the right to be lazy and irresponsible, and then he somehow sanctifies those qualities. Joseph is functioning, and so that verse 4, he finds favor in the sight of Potiphar, as an attendant of Potiphar, and Potiphar gives Joseph what kind of station?
Personal servant.
All right, he makes him the overseer of his house. He puts Joseph in charge of everything he has, if you notice in verse 4. Now, think of it this way. I won't take the time to write all of this. Joseph's brothers can sell him into Egypt, and the Ishmaelite traders can sell him into slavery. But that doesn't mean Joseph has to act like a mistreated slave. He acts like a servant of the Lord who is capable of living, and God places him in charge of everything he has. So think of it this way. People can put him in slavery, but God can put him in charge. If Joseph acts like a man while he's in the circumstances he's in. All right, so that's part of the story we see. Now, in verse 5, while he is in charge of everything Potiphar has, what does it say the Lord did in this case, verse 5?
Blessed Potiphar's
house. All right, he blessed the Egyptian man's house for Joseph's sake. So the Potiphar's house begins to prosper, but why?
It's just the treatment of Joseph.
Because Joseph is the man's steward in this case. He everything in his house and in his field, it begins to prosper. It all does well. He leaves it in Joseph's charge without a worry at all. Now, so the that doesn't mean the story is over, does it? Because God still has a blessing that he wants to bring, and the evil one is still active in this situation. So we are introduced to Mrs. Potiphar. In Potiphar's house, you have to deal with Potiphar's household. And in this case, we're given a detail about Joseph at the end of verse 6, that he was a handsome man in physique and in appearance. And after a while, his master's wife casts her eyes on him and begins to seek to seduce him. Joseph does what? Verse 8. So, now then, he is in Egypt, in a master's house, and in the crosshairs of his master's wife's desires. What does Joseph do now to cooperate with God so that God can deliver him from this?
He tells how much Potiphar trusts him.
All right. What does that tell you about Joseph when he says, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in his house. He's put everything in my charge. He's not kept back anything from me except you, because you're his wife. So what does it tell you about Joseph that he thinks that this way about his master?
He's loyal to him.
All right, he has some loyalty, right? But go farther. What kind of man? All right, integrity. The idea, the integrity is, my master has trusted me enough to put me in charge while he has been able to see me, while he's watching me. I refuse to take that kind of trust and to use it in betrayal of him. Joseph is the kind of man who can think about how his actions may affect someone else, and he's the kind of man who is not going to do the right thing only when somebody is in power is watching him. So this is the kind of life God can use providentially. And there's another detail at the end of verse 9 about Joseph that's significant. What does he say here?
That he also sent him a gift.
All right, how can I do this great evil or great wickedness and sin against God? But now, wait a minute. He was talking here about involvement with Potiphar's wife. He doesn't say, how can I do this great evil and sin against Mrs. Potiphar? Or how can I do this great evil and sin against my master? He says, how can I do this great evil and sin against God? What are some conclusions that you and I should draw about sin from that statement? There is one big one especially.
When we sin, it's against God.
All right. All sin is ultimately against God. It is a betrayal of, or a contradiction of God's nature, a disobedience to His will. Joseph still remembers that regardless of where he is. Now, so this is the mindset Joseph has that's going to allow him to avoid this situation. The question next is, what does Joseph do when Potiphar's wife continues to pester him and pursue him? She takes him by the garment. She tries in a more overt way to engage him in sin. He leaves whatever kind of garment it was and flees out of the house. How has Joseph avoided the pressure to sin here? What do I learn from this?
Got away from the situation.
All right.
Didn't just stay there. You know,
when in the New Testament, Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 6, flee fornication. Joseph is someone who literally did that here, you see. And we think about this when we're considering how one cooperates with the providence of God. God may not let me be tempted above that which I am able to bear. But that doesn't mean I will not have to be willing to run sometimes. So that idea is there. Now, remember that once he has escaped Potiphar's wife's first advance and then her overt physical advance, he still hasn't escaped her spitefulness. Treats him as if he has scorned her and she's going to get even. And what happens is when he flees, she uses that to suggest that he tried to attack her and that she cried out with a loud voice and he ran and got out of the house. And she says to her husband, this Hebrew servant whom you brought among us, this is verse 17, came in to laugh at me. He has belittled me. Now, at this point, Joseph has to deal with the ingratitude and the injustice of his master. Now, think about it. He has to deal with slavery. He has to deal with temptation. And now he has to deal with injustice again. In what way? Has Potiphar sought out the truth? Has he examined the evidence here? Does he reach the conclusion, this man has served me honorably, he would not do this? No. In verse 19 and following, his anger is kindled, and so he takes him and puts him in the prison. It looks like, once again, Joseph has become the object of the worst kind of tragedy and injustice, and nothing is going right in life, and nothing ever will, and all that, except who happens to be also in the prison? Alright, it says in verse 20 and 21, it's where the king's prisoners were confined, and the Lord, verse 21 says, is with Joseph again and shows him steadfast love and gives him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Now, Let me ask you this. How do you gain favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison? What does this tell you about Joseph's behavior and conduct? What kind of conduct in a prison would the warden or the jailer respect?
A model prisoner.
All right. He would be someone who, like Yvonne said a while ago, he is still worshiping and serving God. He's still showing the same kind of character and the same kind of demeanor, even in this situation. And so, where does Joseph end up? What does he end up? What role does he end up having in the prison? Potiphar can put him in prison, but God puts him
in charge.
All right, in charge. Keeper of the prison puts Joseph in charge of all the prison and all the prisoners. You got to bear in mind his age and his background here. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. Look again at capability that's suggested there. And as Potiphar had not had to worry about his house, the jailer doesn't worry about anything in Joseph's charge because why? Lord is with him, and whatever he does, the Lord makes it prosper or succeed here. So here we have Joseph's brothers can put him into Egypt, but God puts him into the captain of the, in charge of the captain of the guard's house. The Potiphar's wife can put him in suspicion, but God puts him in a powerful position in the jail. Okay, Ruth?
Did these people believe in God?
There's no indication that the Egyptians believed in God as the God. The Egyptians were, like Paul speaks in Acts 17, very religious, but their gods were the sun, the river, the animals, the Pharaoh, and maybe they're willing to consider the God of the Hebrews as one of the gods, but not as the God. They're looking at what kind of a man Joseph is. What they know of God is what they see in him. And we're going to see Joseph give credit to God.
I'm looking at verse 3. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So he saw God in him. Is that?
Yes, he saw also Joseph as this Hebrew servant. My point is, they know Joseph is devoted to his God, but they see Yahweh or Jehovah as the God of the Hebrews. That doesn't cause the Egyptians to decide that he's greater than their gods are. That doesn't happen until the plagues later on. Everything we know about the Egyptians suggests their devotion to various kinds of idols, and often in degrading way, but especially their deification of their Pharaoh. And I don't think we're to conclude that they leave their practice here because of Joseph.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just was going to comment that to me it shows that God was so much a part of Joseph that it just came natural to him to be the person that he was.
He's being true to himself by being true to his God.
Just like we should be.
Of course, which is the point I'm trying to get at. Yeah, yeah. Look at now what happens. I'll mention this quickly. In this jail, there are two servants of Pharaoh who happen to be there because of either an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt, or a perceived offense against him. There is the cupbearer of the king. Some believe that this is the guy who not only bore the cup, but also that it meant he tasted whatever drink the Pharaoh was to drink before the Pharaoh did. For what purpose? Make sure it wasn't poison. And then there is the chief baker. In verse 2, the Pharaoh was angry with both of them, and they've been put in the custody of the captain of the guard where Joseph was. and that Joseph is with them. Now, one night they both dream. One guy dreams, the cupbearer dreams that there are three branches, that there's a vine before him, there are three branches. It buds, the blossoms shoot forth, the clusters turn into grapes. Pharaoh's cup is in his hand. He takes the grapes and presses them in the cup and places it in Pharaoh's hand. He can't figure it out. Joseph hears his dream and interprets it for him, that this means in 3 days he's going to be restored back to his position as cupbearer of Pharaoh, trusted and honored position. And the only thing Joseph asks of the man is what? This is verse 10. All right, when you're restored, then you remember me and do me the kindness of making mention of me to Pharaoh. I was stolen and sent here unjustly. I did nothing where I should have been put in the pit. On the other hand, the chief baker has a dream. There is a basket of there are three cake baskets on his head, and the uppermost one, there's all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds came and take it, and Joseph interprets it for this fella. In 3 days, Pharaoh's going to lift up your head and hang you on a tree. Notice he doesn't ask any favors of the chief baker. All right. On the third day, all of this happens as predicted. Now, what happens in verse 41? Chapter 41, verse 1. Yeah. What happens? The beginning of it.
Two whole years
go by. So what now is Joseph the victim of? Either forgetfulness or ingratitude or both, and you be adding to the list here of what all has happened. 2 whole years go by, and this cupbearer, of whom Joseph has asked this one kindness, has neglected to show any of this kindness. He hasn't mentioned Joseph at all to Pharaoh. So what is Joseph doing for this time? He's still in jail. How would it have felt? How would it have looked if it had been you? He is still functioning in the prison where he has been put unfairly because he was sent to Egypt unjustly by his brothers and so on.
Make you want to give up.
It would make you want to give up, wouldn't it? It'd make you think you've been forgotten and that there's no hope for you. Now, what happens in this case?
Pharaoh has, I guess, actually
two dreams, which Joseph will later say are one. But remember, there's seven nice, fat, plump cows, and then there are seven skinny, scrawny, withering away cows that come up out of the river, and they eat the fat cows and they get no fatter. That idea. And then the second dream is there are these 7 ears of grain that grow up. They're wonderfully fruitful and all of that. And then there's an east wind that comes, and there's 7 more blighted, withered, useless ears of grain that come along and consume the first, and excuse me, they're no better. And so the Pharaoh tries to find somebody who can tell him what all this means, and no one is found. He grows angrier and angrier over it. The magicians don't help him any, and finally, our friend, the cupbearer, verse 9, does something. What does he say? All right, he says, I remember my offenses. I'll make mention of my offenses. I wonder what his offense was. He's made a promise, apparently, to Joseph that he hasn't delivered on. Now, just to hurry right at the end here, Joseph ends up sending and calling for Pharaoh, or for Joseph. And Joseph is brought to the Pharaoh, and notice carefully in verse 16. Joseph answers Pharaoh, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer." And then Joseph interprets the dream to him, and look in verse 25. Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do." And he interprets these as 7 fat years and then 7 lean years. In verse 28, it's as I told Pharaoh, God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do. And the purpose of this is so that this thing, in verse 32, this thing is fixed by God. God will shortly bring it about. And of course, the implication is to Pharaoh, you've been given the chance to prepare for this. So what does Pharaoh do?
Puts Joseph in charge.
All right, he puts Joseph in charge. So God, through all these twists and turns of the unfairness, injustice, forgetfulness, temptations to evil, etc., etc., has brought a young man whom his brothers could not stand, a 17-year-old, from a sheep pasture in the land of Canaan to being the second most powerful man in Egypt. Now, would anybody have recognized all these goings on as things God was doing at the time? Obviously not. But when a man remains faithful to God in the midst of all of these things, and when he does what he can diligently and so forth, then God still can use what happens to further his cause, which we will try to finish up looking at next week. Appreciate y'all being here.
I think Joseph was aware of God's favor.
I read it as if this is something that Joseph saw later on. I don't think Joseph saw it until chapter 50. Joseph did understand while it was going on that he needed to be faithful to God. Appreciate y'all staying with me. You can leave from the sermon 1 minute early.